Okay, we will get ourselves organized. Senator Marty, welcome to our committee. We do not have a quorum yet, but in this committee, if I don't start, people are just outside in the hallway. We're just transitioning. So I know that they will be coming in, and we will have quorum in a couple of minutes. So I would like to welcome you to the committee and ask you to please proceed to present Senate File 597.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This bill would work to integrate the concept of service learning into Minnesota schools. Service learning has been around for 30, 40 years. We have some of the national experts and folks who have been most engaged in it over those years here in Minnesota. The National Youth Leadership Council, which is sort of the research and background group, was actually founded by Jim Kiegsmeyer, who's here. And this bill would basically try and integrate it much more. It's been used in a number of school districts. There's lots of evidence of how valuable it is in helping engage kids in the school. And the basic concept is that students, as part of their learning, whether it's in math or English or whatever subject, that they try and do some sort of service project, usually working with some local nonprofit where they're doing something for others. It gives kids a sense of self-worth, a sense of how education is relevant. There's some serious evidence that it helps address opportunity gaps. And so I think it's a very promising thing. This bill went through the Education Policy Committee. It would go back to the Education Finance Committee. But the reason it came here is because there's language on page 4 of the bill, having the Board of Teaching, giving them the chance to create a task force to deal with how we deal with teacher preparation related to this. And we kind of were realizing at the time that we're not necessarily saying they need to create a task force, but we'd like them to look at whether there are things we should do for teacher preparation for this. And so we actually drafted an amendment, which may have actually avoided the need for it to come here. I don't know. But an A1 amendment. But it would be simply asking the board to consider recommendations on things we might do for teacher prep and licensure in the area of service learning. And with that, I'll just turn it over to Paula Bugin and Dr. Jim Kiegsmeyer.
Senator, before you move, we do have the A1 amendment, which is an author amendment. Is your wish that we move that so that we put the bill in the order that you want? Because that's really relevant to this.
Madam Chair, yes, because it is relevant to this committee.
We probably still want
to see the bill, but it may not have come here if it had that on it. But I think this is appropriate.
Correct. So I think we do need to move this amendment. So if we could wait just a few seconds, the members need to receive this, so that we can act on it. Okay, so members, Senator Marty, we are going to move the amendment. Senator Hall moves the A1 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator, so this board basically eliminates the task force. Could you go over that?
Yes,
the amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this would remove the creation of a task force and simply instead have the Board of Teaching consider recommendations. We say they may make recommendations in the area of service learning and teacher prep for that. I think if you talk to the folks who work in service learning in school districts that do that, and there are a number of Minnesota ones that have been heavily involved in that, they'll say the things they could use are, one, some seed grants, which the bill proposes. Again, that's the funding issue. Two, they could use support from the Department of Education, which there was from Colin Powell and and Ted Kennedy and Dave Durenberger had pushed in the 1990s. Big emphasis in Minnesota got funding, and we actually had a position in the Department of Education related to this. They say we could use something like that. Those aren't your jurisdiction. That's the Education Finance Committee one. But again, we also have been hearing from them that they would really be helpful if we could take a look at how teachers are prepared, if they're instructed in their teacher preparation about the value and the benefits and how you would teach in service learning.
Senator, this, in essence, this amendment that you just that we just put in place removes the jurisdiction, and so we have no need to talk about your bill.
Yep.
Because we, the only thing that we are concerned about are is the language around the task force. We cannot talk about anything related to education. So we are happy to incorporate it, and we will move the bill so that it goes to education.
Madam Chair, we're happy to talk and happy to stay silent. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, because we don't have a task force, and that's all we care about in this committee. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was just going to say the exact same thing. I was going to move the A1 amendment and then suggest we just refer to the committee.
Fantastic. Thank you, Senator. So with that, we move Senator Peterson's motion that Senate File 597 be referred to education. All of those, Senator Marty.
Is it to finance? Because it's Ed Finance, and I don't know how you...
Sorry, yes.
Did we adopt the amendment? We did.
Did we adopt the amendment? We did adopt the amendment.
Okay.
So now we're going to
Re-refer
the bill to education finance. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
That's easy.
The motion is adopted. Thank you,
you,
Senator.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we like...
Good way to disclose.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next in the agenda, we have Senator Jensen. Senator, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Jensen, you have Senate File 1315.
1043.
Oh. Is that one or the other one?
Sorry.
We're going to have to switch testifiers.
No. You stay. 1043 is in the agenda. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is Senate File 1043. What it does is it allows credit unions to conduct savings promotion raffles to encourage people to save. After the passage of the Federal American Savings Promotion Act in 2014, which removed the federal barriers that prohibited banks and thrifts from offering prize-linked savings accounts, which is what these would be, states have passed laws that expand the opportunity for residents to save money. This bill removes the state-level barriers to banks and other financial institutions that offer those kinds of accounts. Prize-linked savings products make savings fun by offering savers the chance to win prizes based on their saving activity. The more the person saves, the more the chances are that they will win. And I have someone with me here today to talk to the bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Just for the record, I need to announce that for the previous vote, we did have a quorum, and we do now have a quorum. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair?
Please introduce yourself. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, before the testifier, could we have the staff point out what is relevant to our committee under our jurisdiction?
Thank you. Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, and members, because this deals with raffles, and because this committee has jurisdiction over gambling and charitable gaming, lottery, and
all of it.
This bill is coming before us, but it is important to point out that the only provisions that most of the provisions deal with banking, but the provisions beginning on page 6, line 9 in chapter 609 are in the public safety chapters that deal with gambling being a crime unless it's one of our approved types of gaming.
Thank you. Please proceed and identify yourself for the tape.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ryan Smith, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Credit Union Network, the 128 credit unions across the state and our 1.6 million members. And I'll be very brief because there's not really much that I could add that Senator Jensen hasn't already said. We do want to register our strong support of the bill because we feel that it motivates people to help develop better savings habits. It's really all this is. It's an attempt to get people to learn how to save. About half of Americans right now can't come up with $400 to fix their car or pay a doctor bill. So we are clearly in need of some re-education on the savings front. And while we don't think this is going to be a panacea and fix everything, we do feel that this will be a good step in helping to address that. This is not a new product. There are actually currently 11 states that offer it, and it's been very successful in the places it's been. Across all the states that offer the accounts, 62 to 81% of account holders were financially vulnerable. Between 81 and 85% of participants rolled over their accounts between years, so year over year. And since the product has first been offered in 2009 in Michigan, there have been over 50,000 account holders that have saved collectively $94 million. So we think that this is a really great way to encourage people to save, and we don't need any help from the state to actually allow for it, we don't need any finances from the state. We just need you guys to allow for it to happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Smith, I'm surprised I didn't think of this in commerce, but where do the prizes come from?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, that actually comes from the credit unions themselves. There are a lot of credit unions that have their own foundations. There are national foundations that provide grants and things like that for it. And typically, you can help pay for it because the savings rate on these are a little bit lower than what a traditional savings account would be, although when I think the standard savings account right now is 0.7% savings rate, it's not going to be very significant, but that's generally, there's a lot of different sources that they come from.
Any other questions, members?
Mm-mm. Move the bill.
Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 1043 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Judiciary. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion
It'll
is adopted.
5 hours in judiciary.
Sorry, Senator, but you're going to judiciary.
Oh, yeah.
Senator
Thank
Jensen, you.
You
have Senate File 1315.
Why is it going to judiciary?
Every year. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Senate File 1315. I do have an amendment if someone would like to offer the amendment.
We will offer the amendment. Do we have it in our packet?
Yes.
Okay.
We do.
Thank you. Senator Hall moves the
A1
amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment was to make sure that this had an effective immediately or after passage date. That's what the amendment was. What this bill deals with is in my district, we had a hospital called District 1 that last year we worked to make sure that they could proceed because they were a county hospital with a sale to Allina. That process took place, and it's moving forward. And what we noticed this year is we had left some language that required the board of the hospital to hold their meetings at least once a month. And because of the sale, they soon realized, and they did pass a resolution to say we no longer need to meet every month. And what they had decided is that twice every year would be sufficient for that particular board to meet. And this would be the board of the District 1 hospital, not the new sale of Allina. And I have some people here that serve on the board that would like to address the members of the committee.
Thank you. Yes, welcome to the committee. If you could offer your testimony. Introduce yourself and offer your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Robert Cooper. I've been on the board of directors of District 1 Hospital in Faribault since 2010. I'm also the treasurer and have been for the last year. District 1 Hospital, located in Faribault, provides a broad range of health services to Faribault and the surrounding communities. And as of January 1st of this year, District 1 Hospital became part of the Allina Health System. You may recall the legislation that was passed last year that Senator Jensen just referred to that allowed that transaction to move forward. I'm here today to ask your support for SF 1315, a file which allows for the flexibility of us to reduce the number of our required board meetings to at least two per year. With the transition to Alina, the district itself no longer has a fiduciary responsibility for operations at the hospital. And without overseeing the day-to-day operations, our responsibilities are limited only to overseeing the financial commitment that Alina has made to the district as part of the purchase agreement. And because of that limited scope of the board now, we're again just asking for a resolution to change that requirement that is legislated from being a monthly meeting to meeting just twice a year. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Dr. Glenn Holman. I'm a retired psychologist as well as a District 1 hospital board member, and I've served on the board since 2012. I'm also here to speak in support of Senate File 1315, which would allow the Board of Directors to meet twice per year instead of monthly. As Robert mentioned, the hospital became part of Alina Health earlier this year, and the board duties have changed to a higher level of oversight. And since we do not directly oversee the day-to-day operations of the hospital, holding monthly board meetings has become burdensome. Changing the meeting requirements would allow us to save administration and financial resources while still allowing the board to govern the hospital effectively. And this legislation still gives the board flexibility and accountability as it allows us to meet more than twice a year if needed. Thank you for your time, and we're happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do you have any questions for the senator or the testifiers? If not, Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 1315 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the floor. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Next, we have Senate File 902, Senator Eakin. Is he here? Senator, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 902 is designed to address the issue of a comprehensive system for ensuring the quality of disability services, which we currently do not have here in Minnesota at this time. The State Quality Council is charged with improving the state system for ensuring services for persons with disabilities, ensuring that they are of the highest possible quality. This will be done by implementing a statewide quality improvement system. The Council is committed to a quality system that is person-centered, data and quality-driven, outcome-based, and effective in its use of public funds. The State Quality Council received startup funding in 2011, but it was not funded in 2013. But it has continued to be supported by DHS over the past 2 years because they've seen the value in this program. The State Quality Council will be a driving force, in my view, in Minnesota's compliance with the Olmstead Plan. By assuring that Minnesotans with disabilities have a voice through participation on the state and regional quality councils, by surveying persons with disabilities, by having persons with disabilities actively participate and setting statewide quality improvement goals, we will enhance everyone's ability to live and work in the most integrated settings. Senate File 902 proposes funding for the State Quality Council, statewide surveys of persons with disabilities, and three regional quality councils, which will be made of stockholders, including counties, providers, persons with disabilities, and their families. I think one of the important things about this bill is that it's going to be based on the input from those that are receiving the care and the services, and it will inform the licensing process to ensure that they actually reflect and meet the larger goal of better, more effective quality services. I do have with me here today Dan Zimmer. Oh, and I should probably mention the amendment. Yeah. And we do have an amendment that...
Yes, Senator Eakin, you have the A2 amendment, which is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape you want. And Senator Eaton moves the A2 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with me today, I do have Dan Zimmer, who is the director of the Region 10 Quality Commission, which is really, I think, set a blueprint for the other regional quality councils that would be established by this bill.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Zimmer. If we could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the commission, committee, my name is Dan Zimmer, and I am the director for Minnesota Region 10 Quality Assurance. And I'm here to speak in favor of this bill and in favor of the amendment that that's before you. Region 10 Quality Assurance has been doing a regional approach to quality since we first got legislation in 1997. It is very much person-centered directed. It's used for development, implementation, and monitoring of person-centered planning. And as we're going forward as a state with the Olmsted Plan and moving forward in that direction, we see it as a valuable asset to the rest of the state. We're looking forward to the statewide, the State Quality Council developing regional councils so we can work together and share our experiences with the rest of the state as we move forward with a good quality plan. I'm mostly here if there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmer. I understand that the language includes all of the specific issues that we require in this committee.
Madam Chair and members, this is a little bit different approach, but it's trying to accomplish the same thing as the guidelines. The regional councils are already in law, enacted last year or the year before. That law is a little bit vague on getting these groups started. And so this adds a little layer of specificity. It asks the commissioner to provide, to do some things to put in place the specifics that the councils will find helpful to get them going.
Thank you. Senator Pappas and
thank
Senator
you,
Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the A2 amendment that we've already adopted, I noticed that there's a blank on line 113. And is there, Senator Eakin, is there an intention to fill in that blank?
And
That's 113. Senator Eakin.
And Senator Pappas, I'd probably defer to counsel to explain the amendment.
Ms. James. Madam Chair and members, that's an error on my part, and we should insert the committees who would have jurisdiction over these areas. Senator, I think it should be Human Services. So I would... I think Senator Eakin would like to have the blank filled with Human Services.
Yes, Madam Chair and
Senator Eakin.
Members, yes, I would agree with that.
I'll move that.
Senator Pappas moves the addition to line 113. Ms. James, could you please read that particular clause for us?
Madam Chair and members, on page 1, line 13, insert Human Services into the blank.
Is that clear, members? Thank you, Senator Pappas, for catching that. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Any other questions? Senator Eaton.
I had the same question. I wanted to know who they were reporting to.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for catching that. Any other questions, concerns, members? Could someone move the bill?
So moved.
Okay. Senator Eaton moves that we recommend Senate File 902 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Committee on Finance in Health and Human Services. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next, we have Senator Clausen. Senate File 1246. Senator, welcome to our committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1246, a healthcare workforce initiative. Madam Chair, I would like to offer at this time the A4 amendment.
Members, you have the A4 amendment in your package. This is an author's amendment. Senator Pappas moves the A4 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1246 is a health care workforce initiative, but we're really in your committee today to look at one portion of that, and that is Section 1. A little bit of history about this bill. It's really the result of a legislative action that took place in 2014, in which the legislature authorized a two-year health care commission to identify current and anticipated health care workforce shortages and to evaluate the effectiveness of incentives to retain a highly skilled workforce. And so the commission worked through the summer and fall of 2014 to develop some preliminary recommendations. And what is in Section 1 establishes a Minnesota Healthcare Workforce Council. And the purpose is to, and responsibility, it really is to work in identifying a five-year plan, looking at the comprehensive workforce needs of our health care workforce. It also, in Section 1, it identifies, again, the purpose, the responsibilities, and the provisions to be included in the workforce plan are also identified. With me today is Mark Schoenbaum from the Department of Health, and there is a graphic that you have that I'd like him to explain to you that covers a little bit more about the Healthcare Workforce Council.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. And I'm here today largely in the role as staff to the Legislative Healthcare Workforce Commission that Senator Claussen described. You do have a handout, two-sided handout, in your folders today that just quickly kind of gives you an image of part of the reasoning behind the proposal in Section 1. As you know and as you can see in the graphic, there are many, many actors in the state's healthcare workforce, academic institutions, state agencies, many private sector organizations, including employers. And as you can see by the two summaries underneath the diagram, when the Legislative Healthcare Workforce Commission started to wrap its arms around everything that was going on in the healthcare sector, it came to the conclusion that much of it was not well coordinated and that that could be improved upon. In a parallel track, there's also a state agency and stakeholder policy academy underway through the auspices of the National Governors Association that has reached the same conclusion. So the recommendation here is coming from a couple of sources. Both of those bodies have looked at similar activities around the country, and you have a brief description of four of them on the backside of the handout, and have looked at what Minnesota needs, looked at some good ideas from these other states, and all that has gone into the proposal in Section 1.
Members, do you have any questions? We have some good maps, too.
Madam Chair, those maps relate to other portions of the bill, and this is actually the second of two healthcare workforce. The first one was a loan forgiveness program for healthcare workers in the state, addressing needs in areas of greater Minnesota. This is the second bill, and this talks about compensating for preceptors. It also provides state dollars to increase the number of residency slots in the state for doctors and other positions. And also, as you can see, it has in it a bill for the Comprehensive Healthcare Workforce Plan. And we do have some additional testifiers, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. to see if the members have any questions or any concerns that your testifiers may be able to respond to. Members, do you have any questions, any concerns? If not, Senator, we're going to just move your bill.
Everything is clear.
You know, the jurisdiction in this committee is more about the composition of these councils and that type of thing. So I need somebody to move the bill. Senator Johnson moves Senate File 1246 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Committee on Finance and Health and Human Services. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And next in the agenda, we have Senator Pappas. I am so impressed. Thank you, members. We're moving so fast. I am so worried about the volume of bills that are coming to our committee.
Five more.
I could have put a lot more, but I just didn't know. Well, when members do their due diligence and work with the members so that they explain their bills, it's just a lot easier because you're familiar with the language, and so we know whether or not we have concerns. Senator Pappas, you have Senate File 1274.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. Senate File 1274 is a bill to ratify the contract for home care workers. These are the personal care attendants and others in self-directed programs. Home care workers, as we all know, do incredibly important work, caring for seniors and those with disabilities all across our state. The workers addressed by this contract are the people we entrust to support our loved ones so they can continue to live in their homes. With this contract, we have a chance to improve the lives of tens of thousands of Minnesotans, both workers and clients. Last year, home care workers voted to form their union, and earlier this year, they received a tentative agreement with the state of Minnesota for their first contract. This union is voluntary, with only those who opt in paying dues. But this contract will benefit all 27,000 home care workers in self-directed programs, improving the quality of life of countless families in our state. This contract will address major issues facing home care workers and will help to stabilize the field. Key provisions of the contract, and there's a flyer included in your packet from the union, United Home Care Workers, and also there's a procedural flyer from Greg Hubinger at the Legislative Coordinating Commission. But key provisions of the contract include going from 0 days of paid time off to 5 days for a full-time worker. Those are like sick days, lifting the wage floor over 2 years from $9 an hour to $11 per hour, starting a training fund to improve worker skills, and requiring new worker orientation, including information on how to detect and prevent fraud. Home care workers and their clients have been fighting for years to improve their industry, and this contract represents the fruit of their labor. With the improvements for workers that will come out of this contract, families will receive care will see increased stability and less turnover, which has really been a problem in this industry. This is a statewide issue that touches thousands of families in every corner of Minnesota. With the coming wave of baby boomers, one here, who will need care, many of whom will want to stay in their homes, we cannot wait any longer to address this issue. Home care workers and their clients deserve the stability that this contract will provide, and I ask for your support on this ratification bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Do you have a testifier?
Us is someone working in the field, Shaquanica Johnson, who is a PCA, and she might just say a few words about what this contract means to her.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shaquanica Johnson, and I'm a home care worker from Brooklyn Park. I am a part of the Home Care Workers Union with SEIU and a member of the executive board, and was on the bargaining team for the first contract. I'm here today on behalf of home care workers like myself and the seniors and people with disabilities that we serve to ask for your support for ratifying our first contract. A large chunk of our contract, nearly 70%, goes to establishing paid time off for home care workers, something most of us currently do not have. It would provide 5 days off per year for a full-time worker. we would have sign off from our clients so that they, of course, would still receive the support that they need. It will ensure a healthy environment for our clients and will be a step forward towards ending the awful choice too many of us home care workers have to face regarding going to work sick or taking care of a sick family member and not having a paycheck. This is incredibly important to me because of a personal experience I've had. A few years ago, I had a hysterectomy, and because of a lack of PTO and a lack of a paycheck makes it impossible to save, I end up having to go back to work the very next day. Like most home care workers, I love helping people, but far too long being a home care worker has meant doing our best to help others while putting our own health, both financial and physical, on the back burner. The 5 days of PTO wouldn't have solved all of my problems, but it would have made a huge difference. I am lucky to have a strong and supportive network of friends and family, but home care workers deserve to have basic protection like paid time off. This contract also lifts the wage floor for home care workers to $11 per hour and provides important funding for training. Our population is aging, and a majority of people who would prefer to stay in their homes, but with current conditions and pay, is incredibly hard to maintain a steady, professional workforce. In addition to being a mother and a home care worker, I'm also a taxpayer who cares deeply about maintaining a high level of care for my clients. This means it is important to ensure that money invested in home care is spent correctly and in a transparent way. I am proud of the inclusion in our contract that says that all new home care workers will be required to take an online orientation that includes information about how to detect and report fraud in the Medicare system. In our campaign, we often say that we are fighting so that our home care workers and the people we serve are able to live the life that they choose. An increase in the pay floor and improved benefits and training for home care workers will be important, an important step forward towards stabilizing our workforce, a crucial component to good care, and improve the lives of individuals, of seniors, and people with disability from every corner of our state. I ask that you support the ratification of our contract to improve the lives of tens and thousands of Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Members, do you have any questions for the Senator or Ms. Johnson? Senator Peterson. Senator Thompson.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, my understanding is that the dues have not been set yet. And I guess, generally the financial terms of a contract are pretty important. And in fact, I think we've tried to ascertain the formula that will be used. Nobody seems to really know. Am I right that that has not been set yet?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, no, it hasn't been set yet because the members haven't seen the contract. Once we ratify the contract and they see what it is, then they will set the dues themselves through a Democratic vote. And since it's an open shop, if anyone is not happy with the level of dues, which I think is typically between 1% and 3% is typically what it is, but we don't know exactly what it was, probably on the lower end because these are pretty low-wage workers. If anyone is unhappy with that, they don't have to belong to the union and pay the dues. They still receive all the benefits, all the representation of the union, even if they're not a member.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, I notice in looking over the summary provided by the Legislative Coordinating Commission that the parties may agree to amend the contract, and I don't see that there's any requirement for legislative oversight and approval of those amendments. So theoretically, the terms of the contract that we're ratifying here today, assuming that we do, could be changed essentially as soon as we walk out of this room, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I'm afraid I'm not familiar exactly with how this contract negotiation works. I don't know if there's anyone from MMB who could clarify that, but I would assume that if the terms are changed, that they would have to go back to the legislature for approval, but I don't take my word for it. Is Greg know?
Madam
Mr. Hubinger can address this.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Welcome to our committee. If you could please help us answer that question.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. All of the contracts that the state has with its employee bargaining units have a provision similar to this where the parties are able to amend their contracts. In practice, the amendments are technical in nature and never substantive. They're required when the SER reviews these contracts, they're required to provide copies of those amendments to the subcommittee, and the subcommittee monitors those amendments.
Senator Thompson.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I guess my concern would be, obviously, this is the first time that we've unionized this particular group of people, and so unlike agency contracts, or I should say contracts with employees that work in agencies, et cetera, that we have a long-standing history, we don't have that here. So, you know, I guess it would concern me that there's no limitation on what terms could be changed, and we know one major term will be set after we see this contract, and that's the pricing of the dues. So I guess I would register that as being a little bit of a concern.
Thank you, Senator Thompson.
Madam,
the concern is noted. Please, go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'd like Mr. Hubinger to address that.
Madam Chair and Senator, union dues aren't set in any of the contracts. Those are set by between the board leadership and their members.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and Mr. Hubinger, understood. But if we're approving the relationship, all the other terms of the contract are set the same way, but yet we approve it. So it seems to me that would be a material term to approve.
Members, any other questions? Any other concerns? If not, Senator, would you like to move your...
Madam Chair, I'd move that Senate File 1274 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Yes. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion is adopted. Members, thank you very much. I'm going to ask the staff to tell you a little bit about our schedule. We have been inundated with bills in the last 2 days. As you know, there are a lot of bills that are moving forward that are pretty significant, but the provisions that are in those bills have parts that is under our jurisdiction. Those parts are not that significant, but the volume is significant. So we're going to have to schedule other times in order to complete our agenda. So our staff is going to tell you a little bit about what is our kind of next steps in our committee.
Thank you, Senator. Members, we've added two additional committee hearings. An email has been sent out about this as well. But just so you know, we'll be meeting this Friday, March 13th at 9 a.m. in room 112. Then also the following Friday, March 20th at 10:30 a.m. in room 112. And then also, of course, the regularly scheduled meetings on Monday and Wednesday at 2 p.m.
Thank you. And what I'm going to try to do is, like today, we could have moved a couple of other bills, but I just don't know how many questions you're going to have. So I'm going to bring, you know, kind of longer agendas. We're going to try to go take as many bills as we can so that if we don't have to meet, in overtime another Friday, I will do it. So don't get alarmed if you see an agenda that has, 15 or 16. We will just continue as we move forward. If you have any questions, if you have any concerns, please let our staff know. If not, for now, we are adjourning. Thank you.